There are some elementary materials of Scientology which we mustn't overlook, which have been of fascinating interest to advanced clinical courses for a very long time. The first and foremost of these is the NOLE 2 mystery scale. I've stated this in various ways, mostly because it was refined in statement, but you get a condensation of knowingness. A condensation of knowingness occurs down to lookingness. One has something to look at. And then this condenses and we get emotion. And this condenses and we get effort. And this condenses and we get thinkingness. You know, figure. And this condenses and we get symbols. And the symbols condense and we get eating. And the eating condenses and we get sex. And the sex condenses and we get mystery. Now, we could go on down south again and say, below mystery we get peering. And below peering, why, we would of course get misemotion. And below misemotion, we would get horror of effort. And below horror of effort, why, we would get something on the order of a circuit instead of thinkingness, you see. And below this circuit, why, we would get incomprehensible symbols. And sciences like psychology, and below this circuitry, we would get indigestion, and below indigestion we'd get sterility and impotence, and below this, we would get unconsciousness. And now this is a dwindling spiral. This is the picture of the dwindling spiral, and this is the scale. We can recognize the scale today as in various processes. You might think it merely curiosa at times, but you'd certainly better know some of the things you're looking at. It helps you out a lot with a preclear to know what you're looking at. The auditors have been known to get some results because they knew what they were looking at. Now we go down scale in scouting preclears, pretty darn low. You could say this no, it's originally called the no to sex scale, but you understand that it goes no to sex and then mystery to unconsciousness. You get the idea. It could harmonic. Just as we, in the Philadelphia lectures, demonstrated the fact that the desire and force inhibit spiral is actually, you could say, desire is way up, and then force is in the middle of the tone scale and is inhibited at the bottom. Well, we could also draw the same scale this way. Desire and force inhibit, and you've only come down 1/10 of a millimeter. Then desire and force inhibit, and you've only come down 1/10 of a millimeter, you see. Desire and force inhibit, and you've come down another one, so that you could draw the whole tone scale as a no to mystery scale. The whole tone scale could be drawn in this fashion, with one no to mystery scale laid out on it. Or it could be one no to mystery scale, and we've gone down 1/10 of a millimeter, and one no to mystery scale, we've gone down 1/10 of a millimeter. You get the idea? In other words, out of this big section, we can take little sections of it, and we find out they have all the essential parts of the big section. You see, in this particular case, in this type of graph, why we get the part as having all characteristics of the whole. So we take the band, let us say, this is not meaningful, I mean, I'll just give you an arbitrary area of the tone scale, and we'd say from 1.8 to 2.0, and right in that area we would have a note of mystery scale, complete. See, the part is the same as the whole. This is not always true. You take a machine apart and you'll find out that the cogwheels and the axle are not the same as the whole. But in this particular case, they are the same as the whole because you're dealing essentially with just one thing, and that's thought. And these are the component parts of thought in its condensation. Now, this becomes very curious in the running of opening procedure by duplication, because if you were to closely watch your preclear, and if you were to cause him to describe what was happening and to describe what he was doing, and to describe exactly what you told him to describe, you know, look at it, you know. And he looks at it, and you say, what color is it? And he says, well, it's red. It's a book, by the way, with eight colors on the jacket, see? And he says, it's red. And you say, what color is it? And he says, it's red. There's a little green here. And you say, well, that's fine. You go on along the line. And the next time you come by this book, the same object, which you're repeating on, why, you say, what color is it? And he's gotten away with this. He knows the satisfactory answer to you is it's red with a little bit of green on it. Didn't look at it at all, see. And you say, what color is that? Well, it's red with a little bit of green. Of course, it's blue over here. You get the idea. Brace him up. Just because he's found the answer to be a satisfactory answer to you is no reason under the sun. No reason under the sun why demonstrate that he is looking at it. But this sort of thing occurs. That's beside the point. Just a little bit of an aside here on making him run such a process. All right. Completely aside from this, as the preclear runs, opening procedure by duplication, you will find him coming up the mystery to know scale. You know, you'll start to come up the scale. And this is one of the more curious things, because he's so jammed in at the bottom. In other words, the scale itself is condensed down at the bottom, that he's liable to hit sex, effort, no, you see. Bing, bing, bing. And then he will hit eatingness. You understand, he's going over the scale. It's so condensed that he's only hitting spots on it. So it's perfectly all right. I just want you to know what you're looking at, because this is one of the most curious things. As you make him describe the color and that sort of thing, why, he'll tell you it's good enough to eat, you see. Or he will tell you it is awfully heavy this time. Or he will tell you... I don't know. I'm kind of bored with this. That doesn't, by the way, mean he's up in boredom. He's probably in the apathy of boredom when he tells you such a thing. Every one of the emotional bands has every one of the emotions in it. This is the part being the whole sort of a thing. Well, let's take boredom as an emotion, and we find out there's the anger of boredom, and there's the grief of boredom, and so on. Let's take apathy. This is one of the most remarkable things. There is an apathy of rage, or a rage of apathy, and so forth. Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I could just kill somebody. So we take each one of the emotions, and we find out it has each one of the emotions in it. All right, as he comes up the line, we will discover quite adequately that he is hitting. He's hitting, ping, 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 up the line on the note of mystery scale. If he doesn't do this, he isn't moving. One of the surest tests in the world is this boy going on up tone. It is expressed not so much by his voice tone or his emotional context or something of the sort, but by the actual text of what he's describing. He'll tell you it's a mystery to him. He'll say, I don't know anything about that bottle now. You know, mystery. And then he will tell you, you know, it looks like a perfume bottle, you know, sex. I wonder what this thing contained. Eating, see? And you'll find him sneaking on up the band, you see? And of course, it's heavy, or this is a lot of hard work, he will tell you suddenly. And something like that. He's scooting on up through, effort. And then as he hits the emotion. And then he will hit a period there where he stands and stares at it. He stares at the thing, you know. He's not com lagging. He's just hit the look part of that scale. Well, the scale is useful. You can discover that somebody who is very afraid of effort will do a lot of figure on the effort. You would be amazed at some of the procedures of yesteryear, which simply decided that instead of thinking about it, we would simply shove it through. If you had enough force, you wouldn't do any thinking. You do a minimum of figure. If you had enough force, for instance, if this city had no dearth whatsoever of machinery in order to clean up everything in sight, and if the machinery was easy to run, didn't require many men to run, there was an enormous supply of power available to it, believe me, it wouldn't do much thinking about how it applied that power. It would simply apply it. It would say, well, let's see now, we need a street through here. Well, a street through here, and they're liable to put one through there, even though the inhabitants are still in the houses. And you come by afterwards, you say, hey, what was the matter with you? You know that you knocked down about 8 houses while you're putting that. Oh, did we? Well, that's too bad. Well, we'll build them another house. I would. You know, it isn't that they would be mean about it. It's just that they wouldn't think about it. An enormous amount of force. Therefore, you get societies which are possessed of enormous amounts of force, tremendous quantities of power, and so on, doing very, very little thinking about consequences, which is quite fabulous. But after a few of them have gotten zapped very thoroughly and so forth, these people will start figuring. They will start thinking. They will begin to write essays, monographs, and tomes on the subject of justice. They've been hit often enough so that they're now below effort, and they are worried about justice. You will very often find a preclear who is under the effort band or just sneaking under the effort band. You know, he can still work as a body. Will almost spin if you start to talk to him about justice. Justice. Figure. How could I possibly get any justice? What does he want any justice for? Well, he wants some justice. All right, as we look over this scale, we discover that it describes various manifestations in life in a rather crude fashion, but nevertheless in a very useful fashion. It's crude because we haven't got a test meter that instantly tells us how many points south of effort the individual is. We know he's south of effort, though, you understand. There isn't a psychotic in the land north of effort. There is nobody above effort who has anything wrong with him. The idea, if somebody has something wrong with him, he's below effort. This we know. So this leaves us a choice of places for him to be. Figure, on south. Symbols, on south. Eating, on south. Sex, on south. Mystery, fixation upon. You see this? So that we get the most curious things occurring. We get somebody like Freud suddenly picking out a part of this band and saying, well, this is it. Well, that sure tells you where his particular society was stuck. These boys were below eating. By the way, sex is a solution to being eaten. The production of another mock-up. Symbols, when they condense very heavily, become forms, live forms. A symbol can very easily get out of hand and take on a living personality, an identity, and so on, and go ramping about the land and doing an awful lot. You'd say, this is impossible. What do you mean a symbol could do that? What do you think Alexander the Great was with a symbol? He wasn't he was hardly a thinking being. His interest in the arts was paying off his old teacher Aristotle, who probably talked him into some tight spots. And probably the only man that had ever bested Alexander at anything. So, of course, he sent a lot of specimens home to Aristotle and launched us upon the Dark Age scholasticism under the aegis of the Roman Catholic Church. But Alexander was not a learned man. He was quite able in many lines, but boy, did he want to be Alexander, which tells you immediately that he must have been in the symbol bracket. And I think if we had asked him to work very hard, that wasn't immediately pepped up to show people how great Alexander was, he would have been in a horrible spot. He probably would have sweated. Of course, he's made his name infamous Right on up to present time in India, so that in India today, mothers frighten their little babies to sleep by telling them if they do not go to sleep, Iskander of the Two Horns will get them, and that is Alexander the Great they're talking about. Now, where we have a fellow who is terrifically fixed on a symbol, or where he is being highly symbolical and so on, we can be pretty sure he will drift off that point immediately. He'll go downscale. He will start worrying about eating. Eating will become a very fixed thing with him. And now we go downscale further than that, and he will worry about sex and get stuck in this particular bracket. And if he doesn't watch it, he'll slide out the bottom on that and be enveloped in mystery. Now, you understand the note of sex scale only operates after it has become obsessive and compulsive, when it is a behavior factor, a fixed behavior pattern. When you get a fixed behavior pattern on this, it isn't by choice. Now let's look upscale and find that all of us, sooner or later, sometime or another, hit one or the other of these bands. But we do it knowingly. We do it quite knowingly. We say, well, what I need some exercise. And we go out around and so on. And we go down to the movies to have a good emotional wing-ding, not an American movie. That's all effort, by the way. It's the most beautiful picture of effort. Everybody throwing effort in all directions with a minimum of emotion, livingness, or anything else condensed in it. Actually, the American people keep looking at these things because they're very pretty, not necessarily because they like them. Not patting a foreign movie on the back. The foreign movie is technically inept. It has a tendency to go into figure and below this high technical level. But once in a while, you will see something that is really a story and has some emotion in it, has some appeal to it, and there's somebody alive in the thing. The British movie, by the way, has somebody alive in it. The hero, by the way, of the American movie is best described as a criminal. He has every aspect that you could assign to a criminal. He is highly self-centered. He is very silent. He cares very little about who he shoots. The people around him come to grief. And he himself is in bad trouble and catastrophe. This is a criminal. This isn't any hero. A hero is somebody who goes out and engages in a game of, this is by German definition, of freeing the chained and slaying the bad baron and so forth, and refusing any pay for it of any kind. These are German hero tales. That's where we get the word hero, from Germany. And the whole characteristic there. But the American movie hero today couldn't be found in real life in any penitentiary. He's silent, strong, careless of others, has no thought for anybody else really but himself, and is involved in lots of trouble of one kind or another, and in addition to that, has himself a very, very fine time not. Have you ever noticed one of these heroes enjoying anything? No, he's just kind of woodenly marching forward like a wound-up automaton. These are all characteristics of criminal, by the way. A criminal shares these characteristics. People around him come to grief and so forth. But completely aside from an opinion on the line, I'm just talking about the acceptable story. This story is really no longer acceptable. But Hollywood hasn't found it out yet. Their pictures are playing to empty theaters in all directions. Neither has the American public found foreign movies. They're bad, technically, for one thing, and for another thing, they are in a bad, some bad state of communication. You know, they're in a foreign tongue or something like that. Actually, Italian movies today have a tremendous amount of vitality. The people in them are alive. And if the Italians were real smart, they are once in a while, they would dub in all of their pictures. They're pretty good, but they would dub in their pictures with English. I've seen several that have been, and the English is not too hot. But they don't do a bad job. But they don't do a real good one either. So therefore, it's really not terribly popular. By the way, the Italian movie is too smoky. It is too hot for the censor boards to handle. It's their themes and so forth are real, the same kind of, there's an Italian. Waller, I saw an Italian movie one day in Spain that was an interesting movie. It was the picture, it was all in what we call in retrospect. This person was thinking over what had happened. And this person was sure thinking it over, all right. But it was all dramatized what the person was thinking about. And this girl had run into a guy, and she was a nurse, and he was a bum. She was a nurse in the hospital, and he was a bum. And they'd gotten all tangled up in various directions, and eventually she decided, grimly, to just turn her back on a life romance and go back to nursing in the hospital. This was its total, total theme. But that could happen. See, that could happen. It might have happened within the last week up here at the McDowell Hospital, McDowell Street Hospital up here. Might have. See? These people breathe. They also have something to say to each other. They don't walk around uttering wooden lines which forward the plot. Well, this is just differences on tone scale. But at the same time, we might be looking in a foreign movie. I'm not talking about movie. I'm talking about Scientology. We might be looking in a foreign movie at a lower note of sex scale. You see? A little lower down here. Whereas the American movie is stuck just below effort. See, on a higher band. But look, isn't this interesting? That we could take a higher note of sex scale, you see, and we could say it's stuck there in effort. And then we could get another low note of sex scale, which had a lot more livingness and humanity in it, apparently, and we could say it's stuck lower on the band. Would there be anything wrong with that?
No.
Well, this is observably true all around us. We can't necessarily say that somebody who is refusing effort is then and therefore on the lowest ebb of the note of sex scale. This fellow who, now that is the mistake you could make in interpreting this scale. We know this phenomena, and this is what we get out of this scale. We know that somebody who has been working very hard will sit down and think. We know that if he thinks a while, he'll get lazy and put it into symbols form. See, so he packages his thinking. So that's a condensation of thinking. And we know that if he puts a lot of stuff into label form, he'll have something to do with eating. That's very interesting that the commercial writer writes to eat. He's right there next door to each other, see. Think, symbols, eat. And only when he gets into thoroughly foul condition will he begin to dedicate a life to sex. But he'll slide down these bands, you can expect. Now, you can predict behavior, because unless they're psychotic or neurotic, see, notice sex scales exist in psychosis and neurosis, too. Unless they're psychotic and neurotic, you can predict the next door step to anything anybody's doing. This is a curious method of prediction. I remember a cartoon which occurred in Esquire a great many years ago. It was a scene which was shot across the foot of a bed into a kitchen where their great big ice box was in the kitchen and stove and so on. You could see these things clearly, you see. You can see the foot of this bed, and it was all dark in this bedroom. We were looking in the direction of the kitchen door, and the legend on it is, "And now I'm hungry." You see, these things are right next door to each other. Now, when you get into psychosis, neurosis, actually the packs are close together that they short-circuit. They don't go through the next step. Get the idea? And if you could conceive neurosis or psychosis just as a short circuit where identification is taking place so that A equals A equals A equals A, you will see also that it is very easy for the note of sex scale to get in this condition. Sex equals emotion. Mystery equals effort. See? You ever hear of anybody talking about it would be a hard job figuring it out? This is idiotic. You mean somebody uses effort to think? Well, that's what it declares. It'd be a hard job figuring that out. I've had people tell me, my, you must use up an awful lot of energy writing and so forth. I don't know how we'd use up this energy. You generally finish up a novel or something like that, and you say, whee, I'm glad to stop sitting still and go out and do something active, you know. But this, we don't burn up energy by thinking. It's sillier sort of thing. All right, we can, though. You can go downscale and fool around with some of the machines, and you'll find out that they are running on energy. They do what we're thinking on energy. That's why they're crazy. All right. Now, just as you run, opening procedure by duplication on a low-level case, and find the individual going up this stuff, flip, 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 so do you find societies going in cycles. They go up and down this scale. They have fads of one thing and then another, you know. But this could be a low-level no-to-sex scale. Now, you could have, actually, the no-to-sex scale in the direct vicinity of somebody who is wearing a very thick pair of glasses. This would be a different one, wouldn't it? It'd be heavier and more condensed. Now, we're pulling this train into the station, so let's real carefully here. Condensation is the keynote. Actually, condensation of knowingness is the keynote of all this. And the no-to-sex scale is descriptive of the condensation of knowingness. And as we come down scale on the tone scale, you see, the no-to-sex scale is not a fixed scale on the tone scale. It is qualities on the tone scale. It is the sequence of qualities on the tone scale. What is, as we come down the tone scale, we find out we're condensing the no-to-sex scale. You get that? So that the no-to-sex scale around 30 would be maybe a foot high on a big graph we have up here. But the no-to-sex scale itself is condensing so that we get down around 2.0. It's maybe only a quarter of an inch. It's all jammed in there, you know. It's getting heavier and heavier and thicker and no condense. Now, actually, MEST itself is apparently no more and no less than a totally condensed knowingness. It knows it's solid and fixed. It knows it's got location. That's what it knows. All right, but theoretically, you start to take that stuff apart, it'll start to come up the no-to-sex scale. That's theoretically. I don't. When I take it apart, I make perfect duplicates of it. And it isn't there. So we don't have any worry about it coming up a gradient scale. It just goes. But if you started to take it apart, expand it, in other words, you would get a no-to-sex scale. And when you start taking a preclear apart, you start expanding him just as thoroughly as though you took that wall apart, you see? You start expanding him. And as you expand him on out, he gets in pretty good shape. This would not necessarily even be the amount of space. Now, this is what's peculiar. This isn't even the necessarily, although I graph it with space, the amount of space in this preclear. That isn't necessarily a case, you see. It's the solidity factor. It's the particles per space. See, we don't necessarily just put more space into this preclear, you understand. But we could put less particles per the space he has. And this would be a very good way to look at it. His particles are disappearing here someplace. It's all very well for us to say no to sex scale. And it's all fine for us to theorize like this and take man and put a pin through his back and pin him there to the card and look at him as a nice specimen. But There wouldn't be any sense in it at all unless it had some practicality, unless it demonstrated to you the causation of human behavior and permitted you to take a preclear part simply by knowing this. It would have no value unless you could take an action course with it. Knowing this for its own sake is worthless. So this fellow memorized the Encyclopedia Britannica from beginning to end. Ho-hum. So we have categorized and cataloged humanity like Kraplin. I think it's spelled Kreplin, but it's actually pronounced Kraplin. He categorized psychotic states. It is the most enormous graph you ever saw. I do not think the graph itself has ever been imported into America. I know that the graph, which is used in America, is a condensed or deleted version of the Kraplin graph of psychotic states. But in German, this graph occupies a book. And you know what that means in Germany. When you say book, you mean a broken back, you know. It's big. And when he gets all down to the bottom of it, he throws all other classifications into unclassified. And nearly everybody using this scale simply throws all categories into unclassified. But it's a tremendous amount of something to know, isn't it? Tremendous amount of something to know. But if we just knew this psychotic scale from beginning to end, and had many examples and classifications of it, it would be utterly worthless to us, just as it's worthless to psychiatry, just as psychiatry itself is worthless. That's because they catalog. They're stuck on a low band of symbols, and to them, knowing this is symbols. We have strung out this many words, and therefore we know something. Damned if they do. They don't know anything just because they've laid some labels on things. Just because you know somebody's name is John Jones, there's no reason why you know John Jones. Look how much there was to know about John Jones. An old pal of mine, Russell Hayes, quite an inventor, holds the basic helicopter patents in America. And then the U.S. government went over and got a German Focke-Wulf helicopter, which had stolen and perverted several patents, you see, and brought it over and had it copied as the first helicopter we used. We owned the basic helicopter patents. All the government. Anyway, Russell used to do quite a bit of writing and so forth, and he and I were good friends. We got into a discussion one day about characterization, and we had it hot and heavy, and we talked this thing over. We talked this thing over for 3.5 gallons of beer. Just to give you an idea. That was real discussion, what characterization was. And he finally estimated how long it would take for somebody to actually characterize a hero. How many words would it take to actually characterize somebody if you characterized him all the way? And his estimate on it was about 1 billion words. In other words, many times the length of Dickens' complete works, just to characterize one character, if we were to do it anywhere near fully. This is kind of curious. Writers get interested in characterization, because editors who wouldn't know a human being if they saw one are prone to say if they don't like you or you didn't buy them a drink or you resented their making a pass at your girlfriend at a party, other good reasons that have to do with your skill as a writer. Your skill as a writer is knowing who to pinch and who not to. All right, 1 billion words. Do you realize that everything that has been written in Dianetics and Scientology, right from the word go, every word that has been put on tapes and so forth, is still a characterization of one man? The difference is this man that we are characterizing is not a man or a woman and has no name. This man is not myself. This man is not you. But he is all of us. He is the common denominators. In look, have you ever looked in the tape library down at 616? You know, it cost about $5,000 to copy all the tapes down there.
And we can buy tapes real cheap.
That's 4 years worth of material. And this isn't characterizing one man, not me, not you. This is simply taking the common denominators to all men. So that if we added a few of these combinations together and made some of the eccentricities and so forth possible out of this, we probably would go on for several centuries before we had even finished characterizing all the characteristics of one individual. This would be a real dreary look, wouldn't it? That's why we have little things like the note to sex scale and the tone scale and so forth, is to permit us to work our way through this tremendous morass with the greatest of ease and lightheartedness instead of lightheadedness. Well, Russell Hayes decided to take a billion words, and this is not true. It has taken well in excess of a billion words just to describe the common denominators amongst men. We haven't ever described one man. That's quite a trick, isn't it? It must be a long subject. If all we did was just describe the characteristics in common with one man, this might be an interesting adventure, mightn't it? It certainly wouldn't get us anywhere. Putting a bunch of labels on him, stringing a lot of symbols around him, garlanding him with as's and wherefores, would not get us anywhere. No man would be better off for this having been done. No condition would have changed anywhere for this having been done, because nobody would have the patience or reason to read it. You got to be able to do something with what you know, or it's no good to anybody. And when you get a piece of information which is non-dynamic, I'll tell you something interesting to do to it. Use it for a literary tea. One's hard to put upon, and literary teas and political meetings and things like that, to find enough nothingness to talk about. And you have to have a little store of it. So that's a good thing to do with something that you can't do anything with. And right now I'm inviting you, if there's any part of Scientology that you're not doing anything with, simply throw it away. Just discard it. Throw it away. Because I'm going to tell you something right now, which will do a lot of clarification for you. I've done a lot of talking on this subject, and I think yesterday, giving you the category, first you had to change his mind, then you had to get him to hold a couple of things in an alterable position, then you had to get him into communication. I think this kind of clarifies the goals processing, doesn't it? Certainly clarifies exteriorization. And as far as what the auditor's trying to do, he's trying to exteriorize somebody and make them stable. Exteriorized. Well, that's good clarification there. That's really. How does he do it? Well, the modus operandi is very easily delineated. You've got to get the guy into condition so he'll change his mind, so he can hold 2 points stably at a distance, one from the other, and so that he can be in full communication. And don't even have to have him in very full communication. But you do these things. You got a goal. You got your immediate goals of processing are the last three, and your general broad goal of processing is the first one. And if you do these things, some fantastic things occur. This individual starts to know, and he starts to get himself a better look at existence, and he can afford to be kind. Being kind is a luxury. Remember that. If any of you have any philosophic notion, philosophic maunder, pondering whether it isn't really best to be cruel, and whether it isn't really best to be evil or bad, but you're being good, but you've seen a lot of people who were cruel or evil or bad, and they seem to be getting along and winning. And if any of you are hung up on this old philosophic seesaw of good and evil, whether you should treat the world kindly or viciously or anything like that, if you're hung up in this direction to any degree, just let me point out that being good can be in several parts of the tone scale. It can be highly enforced and unwitting. It can be done to set an example for one's fellows, or it can be done because you can afford to do it. But in the final analysis, it is the easiest thing to do. Once upon a time, I was a supercargo over in the Orient when I was a kid for a while. Most anything. I could play an awfully nasty hand of bridge. So the three officers on the ship needed a fourth, so they made me a supercargo, and I went to Java. Well, anyhow, not the way it worked out. I had an interesting time of it. The old skipper told me that now it was real hard to stay on the straight and narrow, and it was easier to wander down that primrose path and to get into sin and so forth, and to be lured off of the track of righteousness. He told me this was real easy. Well, I went ashore one night in a Chinese port. I was very bored as a youth, as prone to be occasionally, very bored with life. There's very, very little adventure. Life was dull. We'd just gone through a typhoon, but that was all over. I decided that I would stray from the beaten path. I had more trouble. It was the most difficult thing you ever saw in your life, to try to get off the straight and narrow. I finally did manage to get involved one way or the other, and I had an awful hangover the next morning, and a terrific welt under one eye, and so forth. And he stood there telling me, now you should have stayed on the straight and narrow, just even though it was a difficult path, so forth. And I was in enough of a vicious mood that I said, "You see all the difficulty I'm in?" He said, "Yeah, well, I do." I said, "Well, all that difficulty, that lies over there on that primrose path that you've been dressing up for me." And I said, "It's the hardest thing in the world to get into trouble and the hardest thing in the world to get out of it. This is difficult. Being good, that's easy. That's real easy. Well, if you want to get into trouble, why, fall off of the good wagon, and you'll have all of the difficulty and the application of effort and everything that you could possibly imagine. This is hard, sweaty work, being evil. And very unsatisfactory sort of thing on the final analysis, because you never quite find enough energy to go on and finish it up. That's hard work. Hard work. The only reason anybody's up here in the penitentiary is because he didn't have enough energy to go on and finish being evil. That's a luxury to be good. But it's also real easy. You have to put up barriers and do all kinds of things in order to get over into a point where you have games. And then you have to put up a lot more barriers, and then you put up a lot more barriers, and you put up a lot more barriers, and then you put up a lot more barriers, and you're getting to a point where you can be nice and evil. Man, you have to work at it. You have to work at it. If any young girl is given the impression that the world is sitting out there waiting, just waiting to lead her into snares and traps and so forth, she's mistaken. She's mistaken. She'll have to put out a lot of effort. A lot of effort. She could probably drift on all of her years without getting into any trouble at all. But if she wants some excitement, so on, she's liable to have to start putting up barriers of one kind or another. Secrets. And we get down to the crux of this matter, which is she would have to cut communication in some direction. In other words, she'd refuse several refusals. She'd refuse to acknowledge, or she would refuse to originate, or refuse to answer, or refuse to receive an originated communication, or refuse to receive an answer, or refuse to receive an acknowledgement. And if she's got herself in these any one of these six categories, she started to make barriers. Now, she could work at it, and there are very involved ways to go about this. But she is working on condensation of the no to mystery scale. The condensation of the no to mystery scale comes about directly from these particular crimes. Refusal to answer, refusal to acknowledge, refusal to originate, refusal to receive an origin, refusal to receive an acknowledgement, refusal to receive an answer. It's not necessarily in order, but those are the six categories. With two more categories. What are these two categories? You already know them. They're both the two categories, one for each cycle, of live form. She could refuse to be alive, or she could refuse to admit that somebody else was alive. Well, that's eight, isn't it? And these eight things, these eight negatives, result in the condensation and behavior patterns and considerations which we know as the no to mystery scale. This is so much the case that if you were to take any ridge a preclear has, or any ridge you have, and mock it up as receiving origins, answers, acknowledgments, or admitting the presence of a life form. This is a new angle on communication processing, isn't it? And make it give forth originated communications, answers, and acknowledgments, and be a live form, and that ridge will disappear. And so will the center of Earth, and so will its crust, and so will the sun, moon, stars, and all the space of this universe. We have two methods of making nothing out of something. The processing method. All you have to do is make something receive answers, acknowledgments, or originated communications, or deliver answers, acknowledgments, and originated communications, or to perceive the existence of a live form, or to be a live form, and it's gone. That's that. And this type of processing, if engaged upon by the auditor, does not require the remedy of hattingness. Why? Why does it require the remedy of hattingness? Well, Berg had an observation on this, which is an interesting observation. He said, I found during the session that I was putting up screens in order to receive the communication. There's no reason why he has to do this. But he says, hattingness is a necessity if one is going to receive a communication. Well, now, this might or might not be true, because I'll tell you how that mask gets there. It's by refusing to receive a communication. So hattingness comes about directly from a refusal to have a communication. Just the reverse. Comes about from a refusal to have a communication. Or somebody else's refusal to have a communication. Or somebody else's anxiety to deliver a communication. Or one's own anxiety to deliver communication, you get havingness. So havingness will just cut two ribbons on communication processing without needing to be remedied, which is one of the more fabulous manifestations. Now, if your preclear, of course, does start chewing on energy, you know what I mean? You're asking him to make a ridge say hello or receive a hello, something like that. You're asking him to do this. He doesn't do this. He rubs one part of the ridge against another part of the ridge and creates heat. Why, he's lost some havingness by reason of heat, by reason of mechanical things. And when you lose havingness by reason of a mechanical action, it's got to be replaced. Then you have to remedy havingness. But if you make things talk, if you make things live, if you make things receive messages and livingness, no havingness ever needs to be remedied. In other words, life immediately exceeds. No clearer proof could exist of this. Life immediately exceeds any mechanics, because it can continue to thrive in the absence of the mechanics if we permit communication to occur. Fantastic, but very true. All right. There's two methods, then, of making nothing out of things. One is to make a perfect duplicate of it in its own time, in its own place, with its own energy. And you just make a duplicate of it with all those things. And sometimes people have a little difficulty understanding exactly how to do that, because they think they have to put a second duplicate into it, or they have to copy it and push two duplicates together, or they have to do something in this direction. This is not true. All they have to do is relax and simply say there's a second one there, made out of the same materials and the same space. And that's all. I mean, and everything falls apart. Except one thing. Of course, one other thing falls apart, too. There's one thing wrong with this perfect duplicate. It cuts havingness to pieces as though you were putting it through a meat chopper. You know, we can erase an engram today with the greatest of ease with perfect duplication. All you have to do is have the individual look at the engram, make a perfect duplicate of it, it's gone. Somebody will doubt this, perhaps, and I imagine some old Dianeticist might. I had to alter, by the way, the text of one of the Foundation bulletins. They said we could do this in a few seconds. You could make an engram disappear in a few seconds, but this sounded so unreasonable that I changed it and put an error in there. I said a few minutes. That's not true. It's a few seconds is the proper length. There's only one trouble with this, is it doesn't leave any havingness. In other words, you could make a perfect duplicate of anything and make it disappear and discover that the preclear's havingness had been reduced that much. And if you started to make a perfect duplicate of his whole bank from one end to the other, he would be a very reduced man. Let me assure you, he'd be a very unhappy one, if not a spinning one. Everything would start to go by the boards. So, we say there's two methods of making nothing out of something. But if one of these methods has a liability, then we wouldn't say that it was a technique method, would we? We'd say it was a method. Well, it wasn't a technique. Get the idea? So that leaves us with actually just one technique to make nothing out of things. Communication processing. I've been running some tests. Well, I could tell you about them and so forth. Been running some tests on ridges, lines, masses, messed universe, gravities, and so on. Had a preclear lift an ashtray about 3 feet off of a desk simply by making all the particles of the ashtray receive the communication of gravity and make Earth receive the communication from all the particles of the ashtray. And gravity disappeared. I didn't say a mock-up of the ashtray. I said the ashtray. We can put all this down to this. Resistance to or anxiety about communication produces mass and condensation, which we graph as the no to mystery scale. See that? Refusal, negation against communication produces the condensation, which we know is the no to mystery scale. Now, you think a lot of other things ought to be in there, but that's not true. Nothing else belongs in that sentence at all. Well, we could do this. By test, we could find out if this is true, and we would get one of the more curious manifestations. I already told you, I think, about a process. If you have some person that you completely detest, you could work this process on them. If this person is somebody that you mean utterly to destroy, go ahead and work this process on them. Scientology has moved up into a bracket of where one of its processes can process in reverse, right down to death or insanity, just as fast as it can go the other way. This is not a frightening fact, but it happens to be a true one. A Scientologist can handle life. Well, if he can handle life, he can certainly handle death. All right, now, what would this process be? Be one of the more interesting processes. Because it would sound to the preclear like you were running the most reasonable process under the sun. Because this is what he is doing. And therefore, this reasonable process would be acceptable by him, and he would run it. Somebody who had never heard me talk about this process, who had never heard it from anybody out in the field right now, would very happily run this process for you. Give me some things you do not have to be an ARC with. And they're just sure that there will be an end to this somewhere. There will be a stop to this somewhere. And somewhere on down the line, why, all of a sudden the ridges they're accumulating and this horrible mass they're getting into and this terrific anger they're going down into or this grief they're going down into will suddenly alleviate. They'll think this will be a very good thing, you see. Look at all the charge I am building up here and I'm going to spill. They never spill it. It just gets more and more and worse and worse. They go down the tone scale. Now, you must know that the tone scale is simply a description of the emotional band of the note of sex scale. The note of sex scale is a much bigger scale of which we have the tone scale as a livingness manifestation of condensation. See, we put the whole tone scale fits right in on the note of sex scale at emotion. That's a fact. It fits right in there. Now, as we go below apathy, you see, we run into effort. And as we go on down the line, we run into the other minus tone scale manifestations. But the tone scale, as it was originally produced in Science of Survival, and discussed a little earlier in some other lectures and books and so on, actually just belongs to that emotional scale, doesn't it? So he'll go right straight on down the line, and all of a sudden he'll find himself hard-packed into effort. And if you kept up this thing, he'd start to figure his way out of this. If you kept up to this, he would get into an anxiety about the symbols, the exact meaning of the words you were using. And if you kept this up, he would begin to get hungry or worry about being eaten. And if you kept this up, he would go right on down into sex. And he would begin to be sexually excited and so forth. And he'd drop on down through there and he'd tell you it was all a mystery to him. Believe me, it would be. You can create with this process a black five in 2 hours out of a Thetan exterior. The process, again, is simply this. Give me some things you wouldn't have to go into ARC with. Now, the process also runs this way. It's a process. It's a death process. The first one I've ever really come up and described to you. I've described PDH to you and so forth. But this is a real death process. It's much worse than PDH. Give me some things you don't have to go into communication with produces the same result. But give me some things you don't have to agree with does not produce the same result. Give me some things you don't have to like does not produce the same result. So, give me some things you don't have to communicate with does produce the result. And that was the isolation of that corner as the triangle is the only important thing in that triangle. All right? Therefore, you have a death process which produces this condensation known as the node of mystery scale. And this process is a very, very deadly process, but it demonstrates to us that as we decide to go out of communication with things, we decide to die. It was a very funny thing running this process to discover that there is another side to the communication process. Have all of the molecules in a pack of cigarettes or a ridge or in the center of Earth decide to receive a bunch of hellos and then kind of throw them some hellos to receive, you know, but that's all simultaneous action. Have all these particles decide to receive some originated communications. They decide to receive hellos. They decide to receive okays. And you'll find black and white phenomena turning on. The old black and white processing, it goes black and white, black and white. Too much origin, You know, and it'll all go black. So we have them receive some okays. Decide to receive some okays, it'll go white. Have them decide to receive some hellos, go black. See? I mean, go white, black, white, black, white, black, white, black. Get the idea? But if we have them decide to receive some communications or decide to receive the, or perceive that a live form is around, we get a disintegration of the mass without any liability to the mass itself. It simply evaporates into a livingness. Well, this is red-hot phenomena. Discoveries which I've been talking to you about are make-and-break discoveries as far as Scientology is concerned, as far as Dianetic Scientology is concerned. Were these discoveries the problem of life? Might have a lot of ramifications, might have a lot of developments, might have a lot of conditions, but it certainly doesn't have any problem. Now, I've asked you to run Inventing of Wrongness. Interesting process, isn't it? Fascinating process. Now, we're going to run Communication Processing, straight out. And you will find all of these other things running off automatically. The need to have a wrongness would be the need to break communication, would be the need to have a game. But wrongness and havingness are infinitely connected. If a thing is wrong, you don't want it. And after a while, if you can't have something, you only have wrongnesses and so forth. All these involvements take place. But if wrongness and havingness are intimately connected, then assuredly we would find communication and wrongness intimately connected. So it is. So actually the need for wrongness is resolves on communication processing. These discoveries, as I say, not necessarily the note of sex scale, it simply describes the phenomena. But these discoveries concerning communication actually make nothing out of the problem of the human mind. There is no problem with the human mind. Just a problem, how many auditors can we train? That's about all there is to it. Thank you.